Howdy, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Big Facts No Cap, the only podcast that's number one with Dan Danner and late night exam crammers. I'm Adrian, as always, here with Paul. Let's get big factin'. Let's get no capping.
Big facts.
No.
Cap.
Big facts.
No.
Cap.
No cap.
Big facts.
No.
Cap.
Big facts.
No.
Cap.
No cap.
Big facts.
No.
Cap.
Facts.
No.
Cap.
No cap.
Big facts.
No.
Cap.
No cap.
All right.
How's it going?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I think I'm on my like last day of being sick, but we're fingers crossed on that one.
Ah, okay.
But you know, nothing too bad. Mostly just like staying at home alone bored was the main thing. But nothing too crazy.
And truly home alone, because in the last episode you said your roommates weren't around either.
Yep. Yeah, she's house-sitting right now. Or she might be on a trip right now. I'm not sure. We don't keep up with each other's whereabouts like that. We don't share our locations.
You don't like to just check in and be like, you're not usually around this place at that time. Hope everything's okay.
You get a lot of texts like that, or you send a lot of texts like that?
No, but haven't we done an advice column where that was an issue?
People having each other's locations?
Yeah, I feel like, or maybe I just read it and didn't bring it in. I know I also once read some article that was about Fitness Watch that let you share your like health information with other people. And it was basically about people's moms being like hyper attentive to like their heart rate and stuff and contacting them about it.
Yeah, why is it that every time you're at this gay club, your heart rate keeps spiking up? Anything else? Welcome home, Mahmoud Khalil.
Yeah, that's awesome. I was listening to his speech he gave outside of the prison. One of the things he said was like, I hope to come back here when this place is a museum. And I guess his point was like, one day they'll shut down this facility and they'll open a museum here about like the crimes of detaining immigrants.
And I thought that's where he wants to go on vacation.
I'm not 100% sure I understood him correctly, but I thought that was hard. How I understood it, I thought it was a cool line.
Okay, so you're saying it's bars.
It's bars, for sure.
Oh, okay. Yeah. In hard bars news, this week in the Club World Cup, Botafogo, a team from Brazil, was playing PSG, the current champions of Europe, which, to be clear, soccer fans online are incredibly Western chauvinistic and think that European teams are the best and would never lose a single game against any of these South American teams. But they were interviewing the coach before about how he was feeling about facing the best team in Europe right now. And the quote was, the cemetery of football is filled with favorites. And everyone was like, damn, that's hard as hell.
When is the game?
Oh, they won 1-0. It was like 2 days ago or something like that. Yeah, it was a great game.
What league are they? What country's league?
Brazil.
Brazil?
Yeah.
Come on, you're a soccer fan, Adrian. Brasilia.
That's a city in Brazil.
Oh, yeah. Isn't Brasilia like, it's one of those planned cities where they were like, we want a capital. And so we're going to take a basically empty patch of land and build a city there, right?
Either that or it was the previous one before that, but yeah.
I always think that's cool. The idea, I mean, obviously a lot of it nowadays with like Neom and stuff is graft and like not actually going to happen. But the examples that have worked in history, it's always kind of cool.
Yeah. It's so easy to find your way in Barcelona. It's just one big grid.
That was a planned city?
They're religious over there. They would never have an unplanned city.
You mentioned Barth to Adrian Watts, and he's pulling out his notebook.
All my scribbles. What'd you get into since the last time we recorded, which wasn't that long ago?
Yeah, not too much. You want to jump into Media Roundup?
Yeah, sure. What you got for us?
This was something Isabel pointed out, and I didn't realize it until she pointed it out, which was that I was watching a lot of apocalypse media this week. To be fair, 27 days later, 28 days? What's the number?
Yeah, 28.
28 days later. That's such a funny mistake. Goddamn. I'm a dumbass. 28
Wait,
days
later.
Did
you watch that because Phil watched it, or do you guys just all both get into trying to rewatch it at the same 28 time?
28 years later is in theaters now, so.
Yeah.
The night before, I'd watched, like, Children of Men, and the night before that, I'd watched The Day After Tomorrow. And when I was watching 28 Days Later, Isabel was like, you're on a real like apocalyptic movie kick. And I was like, you know, I didn't think about it, but maybe the war has got me like a little bit in a mood. Which, God, what a statement on what being an American is, that when there's like a horrible reality for other people, I delve into a certain type of media to soothe myself.
You should write a senior English thesis about trends in media based on what's going on in the world.
But I didn't even realize I was doing that until she pointed it out, and I was like, I wonder if that was subconscious.
Damn. Well, what are you watching tonight? Apocalypse Now? What other apocalypse movies are there? Barefoot Gen?
Oh, that's a great one, but that's not really an apocalypse movie. That's just a real story of a nuclear holocaust.
Apocalypses can be real. It'll happen. No spoilers. That's on my watch list.
Don't worry. Nothing bad happens. The first half of the movie, the second half is just like it's all about a little kid having a good time.
Nice. I like that. That's what I was looking for, was something light to cleanse the palate.
I bought a used copy of Barefoot Gen, so I should read that at some point.
Mm. And those Avatar Kyoshi books that someone got you a while ago.
I feel like I go in too hard on adults enjoying children's media, but I'll make an exception to enjoy my Avatar Kyoshi books.
Okay.
Do you know when the new season is coming out, or the new series?
Nah, I haven't heard of anything in a while.
Oh, 28 Days Later. Really enjoyed it. I thought that was, I saw, like, other people have pretty middling reviews on it. I think it's one of those things that kind of became, like, a cult classic, even though...
Yeah.
Seems like critics and audiences are pretty, like, you know, not everybody loves it, but I really enjoyed it. I thought it was, like, pretty perfect for what it was trying to do.
Yeah, I haven't watched it in a long time, but I remember really liking it. I didn't know until Phil pointed it out that that's a young Cillian Murphy.
I think if you watched it now, you would recognize immediately. I'm sure you watched it before you knew Cillian.
Yeah.
But he definitely doesn't look too different. Like, as soon as it started, I was like, that's Cillian Murphy.
Hmm. Oh, no. The atom bomb.
I do have the mind of a simpleton, so I think every movie with the same actor has to be a crossover situation.
Samuel L. Jackson would break your brain.
How about you?
Still doing my diet of mostly YouTube and Dropout, but I did have Gerard Carmichael's new special, Don't Be Gay. It is a very big 180 from his last one, Rathaniel. It's not that, what's the word?
Deeper.
Contemplative. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not that sad. It is him just going back to telling jokes, which is kind of nice. And it is like a big 180, and that it's just him telling jokes about his sex life. So it's a pretty fun special. If you like Gerard, I'm sure you'll like it. He's as charismatic as ever, and he's just as funny as ever in that one.
I do like Gerard. Does he do the like long pause thing? Him and Rami as friends, it really cracks me up that they both have that style of the like say something controversial and then give it a long pause. At least they don't like point to the audience and go too much. At least they don't do that, but the long pause,
offended, triggered.
It's not me complaining. I do think they're both talented and funny, but it is like, I don't know, it's a real through line between I think their group of comedians.
Yeah, he hits a couple of those. And then last night I watched Lose, which I think was a German horror film. It was confusing. It was only like a 10 minutes over an hour. I think I read somewhere that it's a student thesis film, which if it is, that's insane. It's way really high quality. But definitely not a movie that tries to explain anything to you. So it switches between German and Spanish and also has a very confusing plot. But it did look very cool. So, but yeah, that's all I had for Media Roundup. What's do you want to get to the theme or what are we doing?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Studying.
Yeah, this is Isabel's been studying for the GRE, and so I've been in the room while she's doing that, so that's why I was thinking about this.
I forgot. I think I had flashcards for the GRE and maybe a book, but I don't remember where I even got those from.
Yeah, I thought the crazy part, and I do kind of enjoy this, is like she has like all these words she's supposed to memorize because they might be words that show up on the GRE. Forget how many it is, but
I had those, yeah.
Sometimes she shouts them out to me, and I'm like, yeah, no idea what that word means.
Once she takes it, can we compare scores?
Yeah, sure.
Nice. Yeah, that was the same thing as the SAT, where I didn't have money to take it twice, so it was real, like, one shot, so I kind of felt like I had to try and study for it, even though it's one of those things that people kind of tell you you can't study for. That feels like a myth, though. I feel like you can very easily study for those tests.
Based on what she's seen, it seems like it's very standardized what sort of questions they ask, unless she's being misled by this course she's
someone
doing.
Who's taking money from her? Oh, okay. Well, I don't know. Wait, is she taking a subject test too, or just the general?
Just the general, and I don't think she's taking it really seriously, but I think she's saying that it really only matters for like one or two programs she's trying to get into. Like a lot of them don't take it.
Yeah, we abolished it from our program. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's one or two schools that make a difference in, but a lot of them won't even accept it. So,
yeah, I remember we had that conversation. I had some frustrated people come to me after a lab meeting being like, yeah, and then this person was trying, like, we were arguing about whether or not the ABGG should drop the GRE from our requirements. And, like, someone was like, oh, well, you know, every data point helps us make a decision. And other people were like, no, there's inequities in the GRE or whatever. And this person kept saying we should keep it. And I was like, well, I don't know. I think it helped me out, so I like it.
I think
it.
There's always inequities in standardized testing because it's always going to be based on who can buy these, like, books and take the, like, specific classes that teach you that to that exact
and
test.
Being able to take it however many times you want.
Like, it's crazy to me that there's a word bank of words you can memorize that'll help you. It's like, shouldn't it change enough that that word bank, like, it feels like that's a flaw in the test, that there's a known word bank, you know?
Yeah. So that's what's inspired your studying idea?
Yeah, because she keeps shouting out questions to me, and it does remind me of, like, that it can be kind of fun when you have, like, a set amount of knowledge you're supposed to know to, like, practice against it. Like, when she throws out, like, a little math question or definition of a word and I don't know it, I'm like, ah, I do kind of want to dig into it and know that.
Damn, your thirst for knowledge.
Real nerd-ass behavior to react that way.
Hey, you should do more trivia.
Should do more trivia.
Yeah. You were always a very studious child, right? You were always nosing a book, doing your homework, always like 10 steps ahead, never did anything last minute. You were always like the number one person in each group project you did.
Yeah, of course.
I feel like that was your reputation.
No, I think we've talked about this on the pod. I don't like going the other direction and saying like, oh, I never studied, because that's like that, what is it, that talented kid syndrome, whatever it's called.
Mature for your age, nubile, supple.
I did try to skate by on as little work as I could to grade point return. I was always trying to min-max.
So you were a C's get degrees type guy.
I was a B's and A's, keep my parents off my back type guy.
Oh yeah, B's and A's, keep this B and this A off my back, you know what I mean? That's what Paul was always saying. Very disrespectful. So what were you compared to your siblings? Were you like the worst child, the best child, the
By far the worst. I'm not going to bring in this column. I'm going to bring in a different one. But one of the columns I brought in was like a person who's frustrated with their kids because their kid just entered high school and was refusing to study and saying, well, I'm getting B's and A's. So like, how can you have an issue with me not studying? And I was kind of that kid. Mm. My parents were like, well, why are you not, you know, studying after school every day? Your siblings weren't. And I was like, well, I'm getting the B's and A's. Like, can you really? Yeah, they were very frustrated with what they perceived as like a lack of work ethic.
Wow. B's and A's. You didn't really have a tiger mom, did you?
My sister and brother. Well, no, I think my brother was a BA student, too. My sister was an all A student.
That makes sense. Well, that's good for gender equity because we were basically the opposite. My brother and I were straight A students and my sister was the one who struggled a lot more.
Mm.
Which that was I remember that really distinctly one time where my mom was getting mad at my sister after school because her report card had a few bad grades on it. And so I guess it was just, I don't know, coming from a family that didn't get very far in education, they were both just like, my parents were both just like yelling at Dorley, like, go into your room and study. And she's like, we just finished our exams. I have nothing to study for. You're just telling me to go into my room and be quiet. And I just remember that being funny to me because I was like, yeah, I mean, if she just took her test, there's nothing to study for. But that was the only way they could conceptualize punishment was go to your room and study things. But did you ever, you guys never got the $10 per A on a report card or like, I make you whatever you want for dinner? I think we talked about this before. Ben Schaefer's mom was, if you get all A's, I'll make you whatever you want for dinner. She had these chocolate cherry muffins that were so fucking good, dude. I should have asked for the recipe for those. I think we only got the recipe for like a mushroom brown rice thing that she used to make. I think my mom was offended that I asked.
Very opposite from me telling that story of my mom being, getting the recipes I liked from families.
Nah. She said, you're bringing in the White Devil's recipes into our home. These are the recipes of Yakubian devils.
I forgot your mom was an NOI member. Your mom was a Black Israelite. She was always on that corner in Lexington.
Yeah. I think that's what it was. I think A's were always expected for me. I think sometimes I'd try and ask for something, but I don't think I'd usually get anything. And then Dorley's strategy was, anything that she needed to get signed or if she ever needed lunch money, ask dad while he's watching soccer and he'll sign whatever without looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how she got by for a lot of those things.
For me, I did hit a point in college where not freshman year, but after that, where like, I did have to figure out how to study, mm-hmm. because it's like that's when it got hard enough that if I didn't, I was going to fail exams.
Yeah, it'll get to you.
So it didn't really hit me too much in high school, but I mean, I guess the point is you should make high school hard enough that kids have to learn to study so that they don't hit mm-hmm. that wall in college and then have to learn to study while actually doing the hard studying.
Yeah, you're supposed to build the habits.
Yeah.
But it's really hard because a lot of teachers would always make that argument of like, you're not going to be able to get by with this kind of work effort in the next grade. And then you kind of could.
Yeah.
And so it was never the right message. It's just like, eventually you're going to need these skills. You should start learning them.
And you hit that same wall in college, or you felt like you could still just skate by on learning it in class in college?
I think junior year, like when I had to like memorize amino acids and like stuff in biochemistry, that was in organic chemistry. That's when I really had to learn how to study. And then also, I've mentioned this before, but high school to college was when I made the decision of like, oh, I'm going to stop using Spark Notes. I'm just going to actually read whatever I get assigned to read. Which was not a hard transition, but it did make that a lot easier where I just took the time to actually read anything I was given as a piece of thing. I'm surprised. I don't know. That might have been one of those things where if you're seen as a smart kid, teachers just grade you easily. Because, like, I think I wrote some ass essays in high school. Like, literally just using, like, the top three quotes from the Spark Notes for the book or whatever.
I wrote some really bad essays in high school. That was always my weak point, too.
Yeah. I think I've told you before, my roommate asked me once, or my old roommate, like, if you went back to college now, do you think you'd do better or worse? And I was like, way better.
Oh,
I think
it
conceptually,
would be crazy.
I think I just conceptually understand how to write and like do things better at a level that I didn't know when I was younger.
I agree. I think also having like a 9-to-5 has just taught me how to like get over boredom and sit and work for a set amount of time and not like feel like any amount of work time is like, you know, it's a
taken away from you and your buds hanging out in the forest.
The min-maxing thing of being like, if the less amount of time I spend studying for the most effort is just like, yeah, you can just kind of take some time and actually sit down and study for that set time instead of trying to get away with as little as possible.
Yeah. That being said, yeah, in terms of, I was an AB student my first 2 years of college, and then I got all A's my junior and senior year. So even though I didn't, I think that maybe is what kicked in that I need to start studying is when I was like, I wouldn't mind getting all A's again like I used to. I remember that one of the B's I got my freshman year was because I took a course in genetics, which just very classic. I couldn't understand the professor because of their accent. So I just read the textbook all the way through and then went to every exam and did sort of okay.
Well, when you said that thing about amino acids, and I guess this probably came up a lot for you with biology courses or chemistry courses, but for me, there was one course in high school, like a pharmacy course, where there was like a lot of memorization.
Yeah, I did a medical terminology class.
And that type of stuff, I really was pretty heavy on the like mnemonics. I was always like a person who tried to memorize things. And I don't think anybody taught it to me. It's just like since I've been really young, that's how I try to memorize things is like thinking of something that rhymes with the word or something that the word reminds me of that will tip me off to like the meaning of the word that I'm supposed to memorize for the test, the effect it's supposed to have or whatever.
I did that for produce codes when I worked at Trader Joe's. I had a rhyme for each of them. How were you at STEMS in sixth grade when we used to have to memorize all of those?
I can't remember.
Really? I think Quentin was in my class that I learned STEMS in, and I was always mad that he beat me at, like, he was the only one who would get 100%, and I'd get, like, 95 or 98.
Shout out to Quentin.
And I'd be like, that little nerd.
Anybody who was better than you was a nerd, anybody dumber than you was a jock.
Yeah, I was the line. I don't know, was all the studying based on memorization, or, like, when you had to... Because like,
that was the toughest thing for me, was because the memorization, you couldn't just listen in class and learn. So that was a lot of the studying I did like pre-college with, I remember eighth grade with South Carolina history.
Oh, God, that was the worst.
I remember having to actually study for those like county quizzes, like what are the name of every county in South Carolina? Like,
you didn't do what one of my friends who I ended up doing IB with did, where she just kept a map of South Carolina in her ID case so she could look at it during the quiz.
Oh, that was such a big cheating methodology at our middle school.
Yeah.
How did they not start checking IDs before everything? But
the other thing she would do, and this was in IB economics, is she would, since we had iPads then, she would turn her iPad to the lowest brightness and then just keep it on during the exam. I remember that was a real moral dilemma where, like, we had a discussion about it with some of the other kids in IB, and Jordan kept saying, like, well, she's never going to, like, top you in the class ranking. I don't think it matters if she wants to cheat and get a passing grade. And other people were like, no, she's cheating. It's immoral. Oh, did you ever do those tips like Well, if you want to chew gum during the exam, then you have to chew while you're studying, because you have to replicate the the sensory environment you were in when you were studying.
I did not. Did you?
I think I got that advice for people who tried to take Ritalin during exams, where they were like, you have to study on Ritalin too, otherwise it doesn't work. And I don't know if that was just them trying to sell more Ritalin, now that I think about it.
Big Ritalin really ruled Lexington High School.
This was in college. I don't think any. I don't know. I guess I knew a few people who were abusing pills in high school, but they weren't my close friends. But yeah, that's like, yeah, that's that Scrubs joke about, like, you know how one a day vitamin can double their sales? Two a day vitamins. I'm just being like, you got to take it when you study and when you do the exam. Yeah, and then organic chemistry was the first time I broke down and went to office hours. Which I always recommend to my students, and it is kind of hypocritical of me that I, like, only ever did it, like, a couple of times in college.
In college, yeah, I started going to office hours, especially because, like, I had a project-heavy major, and I always kind of resented that because I was like, I'm so much better at just learning material to take a test. You can't really, like, you can't min-max a project. Like, you know, your application has to work. Like, you have to get it to, like, a point where it executes correctly. Or else you're just not getting the points for completing that project. So I always resented the fact that...
Didn't you tell a story about, like, something where you could do something lazy and get an 80 and then just give up?
Yeah, there was one teacher who had, like, an automated turn-in where you would turn it in, he would execute the application on his servers, grade it, and send you back your grade, and you were allowed to do it, like, once a day for, like, you know, a couple days leading up to the deadline. And if you ever liked your grade, you could go, okay, I'm done. And I think somebody in the class just turned in, like, a real low-effort version of the application, and they got an 80% on it. And, yeah, so there was one time where we could BS and get away with it, and they just told everybody, like, hey, if you do this really lazy version, you get a good enough grade. And I just was like, absolutely, I'm doing that.
Yeah, now I got more time to play Pokemon.
It was an operating systems class, and it was a memory allocation for an operating system. We had to write in C. And it was, like, all these things you could do to optimize how you, like, allocate the memory. And it was just, like, if you just allocate, like, a big chunk of memory and send it in and don't do any optimizations, you basically just still get, like, an 80%.
Mm. And there's one guy who's like, well, actually, if you use an algorithm based on the traveling salesman paradox, you could actually figure out the way you do the...
I mean, that took, like, something that was going to be, like, 8 hours of work and made it, like, you know, like a 30-minute coding exercise. That was sweet. But overall, that wasn't, possible on everything.
Right. Overall, you had to make the apps that got the drone to correctly bomb people.
Yeah.
Is that a lot of what Clemson was teaching?
That's a lot of what we were learning in computer engineering.
No, you were moving robots. What were you doing with your code?
It wasn't even a robot. A robot would have been so easy. Like, everything was purposefully made difficult. So it wasn't like we had Arduinos, you know, it was like we had an actuator and we had to trigger it by, you know, actually changing the voltage on the board and shit. It was all more complicated than it needed to be to teach us lessons.
Mm. It seems like a lot. How much time in the day did you have allocated to harassing the one female student in every class?
I don't know. You know, I was trying to min-max, so I really wasn't putting all my effort points into harassing the female students, but that for sure sense. It happened.
Mm.
I do remember in one group project, one of our teammates getting very rightfully angry because this one kid on our team kept, like, grabbing tools from her hand without, like, asking while we were building something. He kept, like, he would, like, she would be, like, screwing something in, and he'd be like, you're not doing it right, and he would, like, yank it from her, and I was like, dude, Jesus Christ.
God damn. Yeah, that's cool. I guess group projects is his own theme, but yeah, I was always the person who... I was socially intelligent enough to not let people put work on me that I didn't need to do, but I always did my part as well as I could.
Have you studied for anything recently, like post-GRE? I mean, grad school's pretty different. You're not really studying as much as learning or...
You're studying for your qualifying exam. That's the last exam you ever have to take, and that was... just reading papers and talking to my committee members. I'm pretty sure I completely boofed the question on kin selection, but, like, I don't know. What are they going to do? I don't think I could answer it now. And then, I was very proudly, like, after that exam, I was like, I'm never taking another exam for as long as I live. And I think that's technically true. I mean, to get a state job, you have to take exams, but they're more like just saying what your experience is in different questions. Yeah, I haven't had to study for anything in a while, besides the very light amount of studying I do before trivia of, like, what happened on this day and what presidents happened or whatever.
Oh, earlier you brought up the kids who showed up to office hours. the times I did show up for office hours, usually when I was struggling with a project and wanted to ask, like, how to overcome a hurdle, did you ever get the sense that the other people there, it was often like one or two people like me, like with a hurdle they wanted to get over, but there was always the people that I got the sense that they wanted to be there socially because they thought maybe if the professor liked them, they would get a good grade, or maybe they just like wanted the professor to be their mentor. I never really knew exactly why, but you could tell some kids just liked showing up to office hours, maybe because they felt like this is what you're supposed to do well in a class, but it felt like they didn't really have any particular question or thing they needed answered. They just wanted to talk to the professor about the project in a generic way.
I've had more of in my office hours, especially when they were on Zoom, where like I'd call on people as they came in, the students that were like, oh no, I'm just here to listen to what other people have to ask.
Oh, interesting.
Not a lot of like, I'm here to hang out with you, but more of like, I don't have a question, but I'm here to just listen to what other people are struggling with to help me.
Yeah, maybe with the TA, it's different than the professor because they're not looking to the TA to mentor them or to like particularly like them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've done office hours as a professor too. And that is a little bit like that. Yeah, sometimes it is just students coming in to hang. And like they're like, you know, it's summer, I got some extra time. Let's hang out with Adrian for an hour while he answers other people's questions.
And maybe because you're not in person for a lot of what you do, it's a little different, the energy of who's going to show up.
Yeah. Yeah, the one time I went to office hours, it was terrible because it was the fratty chemistry bros who, that was basically the secret
the
I heard
chem-bros?
Was that if you wanted to pass.
The chem bros were out?
I don't know why those were frat dudes in TAing that class, but yeah, that was the secret everyone told you, was if you go to office hours, they'll tell you what's on the exam.
I mean, that was a big part of my like thoughts around doing as well as you can for the least amount of effort, was trying to kind of like intuit what the teacher was telling you would be on the exam, or the TAs was kind of trying to like, when the teacher gives you that, like, you know, weird nudge wink in class about, like, this is important, being like, oh, okay, they're secretly saying this is going to be a test on the exam. And I would note that down.
Mm. And in terms of any other studying, flashcards, highlighting, I did all a little bit of that stuff, rewriting your notes. I've always been a handwritten note person, so I really don't like typing my notes.
Cool. Do you want to get into my question?
Sure.
All right, Adrian, I got this new advice column we haven't done before by the We Are Teachers. I don't know if
I
it's
think
a
we've
blog
done this column
or
before.
Site. We have?
I think I've brought them in before, yeah.
Oh, well, never mind.
But a long time ago.
It's a
this
good
my
column.
Birthday.
There's some wild questions on here. It reminds you of
hey,
how
man.
Much bullshit teachers deal with scrolling through it. Like, half the questions are just, like, the most unreasonable behavior by like parents and or principals, where they're like, how
my
do I deal with this?
My kids are trying to cancel me for not having Skibbity Riz.
Literally, it's shit like that. Even this one, you'll see what it's all about. So I'll jump into it. This one's by Kelly Trelaven.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know if this is important for our audience to know, but redhead. In April 1st, 2024. Do you think her having red hair is going to color her answer, or that's just,
Probably.
Okay. Dear We Are Teachers, I've been teaching AP US History for the last 12 years. Last semester, after my students repeatedly expressed surprise that certain states existed, I handed out a diagnostic. Bitch, shut up, North Dakota. Get the fuck out of here. I handed out a diagnostic quiz and asked them to label the map. Out of 130 students, 5 could label all 50 states. So a few weeks ago, I had the students learn the 50 states on top of their regular curriculum. A group of parents emailed me calling me sadistic, demeaning, and petty. I am floored. My administrator supports me, but this might be my breaking point. Are other teachers seeing this kind of thing? No one at my school seems surprised. They signed it off seriously ill-annoyed.
Nice. The Sufjan Stevens album?
No, that was a pun on noise. This is a pun on annoyed. Adrian, keep up. Not that
okay,
hard.
Okay, okay.
Do you think she's based in Illinois, or it's just a play on the states in general?
Oh, she's teaching Southside Chicago. She's like, how do I reach these kids?
I know we've had this conversation before. I know I can't label all 50 states on a map based on memory, and you can, right?
I think you and I can get to like 45 or 46, but there's always like a few that you never remember. No, that was from naming all of them. I don't know if it was on a map. I don't know if I've tried doing that in a while.
I thought you said you could for some reason, or maybe you said you could when you were in school.
Yeah, maybe when I was in school. I don't think I could now. It's definitely almost certainly I would go in confidently and then like lose track by the last two or three.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is a pretty common pedagogy question that I've like heard people give different takes on. I remember learning the having to memorize like the first however many elements of the periodic table and thinking that it was a dumb thing to have to do. I remember talking to a visiting professor about how our like third intro bio series is all about the tree of life and phylogeny. And he was like, yeah, I don't really believe in like teaching that for like an
the
entire
Terrence
quarter.
The Terrence Malick movie, Tree of Life? That's a great movie.
Yeah, but an entire quarter? You need to know that this is related to this. So yeah, I kind of get that like it seems old school to have to memorize all these. It probably is a good skill, but I mean, I don't know.
Well, there's the things people say, which is like, if you do an exercise like this, it's usually more beneficial to make them memorize like a fact along with every state than just the
states.
So you
can mind palace it, yeah.
Also, I don't think like 50 states is that hard. You know what I mean? Like for a high schooler in an AP US history, like we had to do this in middle school for the counties, which isn't that different, right? Like all the counties
in
South Carolina.
Yeah, but there's like, what, 13 counties in South Carolina?
I thought there was like more like 20 to 30. And those are like way less like hammered into your head from just like with the states, you're going to know half of them. You're going to know all the ones that like border water.
Yeah, you're going to know the coastal elites.
You're going to know Hawaii and Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
I think half of them you kind of get for free with states.
But for me, the thing is, well, first of all, I guess his surprise that students didn't know certain states existed seems to warrant this. And maybe it's not one of those things where you like rely on going back to the old school method because you're like, these kids don't know how to do math. Like,
yeah, that is kind of shocking that they would be surprised. What state were they surprised existed?
Delaware? I don't know.
That is a weird state.
Yeah, I think the parents emailing him. So he must have tested them, right? It must be a big part of their grade. Otherwise, just having to learn the states isn't that big of a deal.
Oh,
it must
I
be
thought
that
it was the studying aspect that annoyed the parents. Like, oh, they had to be up for so long to memorize all 50 states. Or like,
no, because
they called
they
it
could just do the Animaniacs song. Yeah, I think testing them on it and making it a big part of their grade is the only way this could make someone angry. Otherwise, who cares? I don't know.
Well, I don't know if a big part of their grade, but maybe because it was a quiz, they had to expand effort to do it.
Mm.
And that annoyed the parents that their kids had to, like, I don't know, sit up and study a map.
God, I would not give my email to parents. I would give them, like, a written P.O. box to send letters to.
If you don't have enough effort in your heart to,
yeah,
to write it by
hand.
Hater. I think nowadays you have to have the school email and the parents have automatic access to it.
Ugh, don't like that. Yeah, I don't know. This seems... I'm glad the administrator supports him. That always puts you in a good space to kind of be able to tell people to F off.
I think it's a very reasonable thing to do. You know, I get what you're saying about the, like, all the chemicals on the periodic table. That feels more like, not ethereal knowledge, but, like, knowledge that could never come in handy. But, like, knowing the states
I mean,
and where they are, I can see like, why when you get to that section in U.S. history about, like, knowing where Oregon is when you do the Oregon Trail and being like, oh, yeah, it start, you know, like, we start in Illinois and go to Oregon. Like, for the students, it's helpful for them to have a mental map that when you say that, they go, oh, okay, it would be around here in the U.S., go in this direction.
Yeah.
Versus them just being like, I don't know where the fuck either of those places are.
Only in Ohio, you know what I mean? Yeah, but it seems like there's that Einstein quote about, like, do you have whatever memorized? And he's like, no, anytime I need to go find that fact, I just look it up in a book. And, like, it seems a little bit like that to me, where, like, this seems a little bit too old to be doing this. Like, drill this into children when their brains are pliable when they're, like, in kindergarten. But, like, I don't know if high school is the time to try and teach everybody the 50 states. I don't know. It just seems to me like something you could look up. You have a map on your phone at any time that you need to go look at a map, like...
Sure, but if you found out your high schoolers didn't know their basic times tables, you wouldn't say, oh, well, they have a calculator. You'd go, it's pretty reasonable to include, like, a, I don't know.
Well, no. I mean, I would say I've talked to people who run the intro bio series here at Davis, and, like, when it comes to knowledge that kids are coming without, what they do is they kind of, like,
teach
move
around
the curriculum
it.
So that you don't, yeah, you don't, because, like, I'm not a math teacher. I'm not going to teach you how to do math in this class, so we're going
sure,
to have to move the biology around your math.
This is an AP US history, and it's a US states. Like, having at least a cursory knowledge of the, well, not cursory, having a knowledge of the state gives you some information when you hear the name of a state invoked to go, okay, that's where it is.
Okay. Yeah. I see your point. Again, I think the biggest thing is whether or not this is like a quiz that counted for a, some amount of their grade, that like a student shouldn't be moving from an A to a B because they couldn't memorize all the states.
I also think the second part of it to me is that it is easy enough knowledge that it's odd to me that it created, it ruffled this many feathers. Like, even if you're like, this isn't the best way to teach this information or the right place to, it feels like, okay, but it's still easy enough that it shouldn't ruffle feathers.
It's also not a generational thing if the parents think that this is a sadistic thing to have to learn.
Yeah. Hmm.
I don't know. What was the dumbest thing you had to memorize in school?
Man, maybe I just have a chip on my shoulder about those county quizzes, but I hated that.
Hold on. Actually, I want to see which of us is closer. I feel like I remember it being maybe like 15 at most. I remember Horry County. I remember Richland County.
Wait, I'm supposed to remember it's called Richland? Come on now. Columbia County.
Hey, Rich what? 46. Yeah, you're right. Dang. That is bullshit. Why do we have to learn that?
I know. I don't remember it at all. That's like a lot less, other than the ones we lived in, that was, I had no starting point, you know? That was all new information as I was learning it.
South Carolina, that is like, it makes sense for the number of students that retain in the state. But it kind of feels like when we learned about slavery in seventh grade and my black friend Julian tried to get out of it by being like, this is really traumatic information for me, Mrs. Butler. Do I really have to learn this? And like, she really, like most teachers, she had to take that question at face value and come up with a response about how important it is to learn that history, even if it's sad. I wish I could have been like, hey, Mrs. Cease, I think that was my eighth grade history teacher. I'm getting out of this state. I don't need to know these counties. I think I should be excused from these lessons. All these other fuckers who are going to stay in this state forever, they can learn it. But
well, I don't think I even remembered it to the end of that course. You know, I really like that was
South Carolina geography
for the quiz and forgotten by the end of that. Week.
Is there not an Animaniacs song about all the counties in South Carolina?
What else is kind of in that realm of was there anything you had a chip on your shoulder about having to learn where you're like, oh, this feels stupid?
A chip on my shoulder. I think I remember the times tables getting me for a little bit when I was in like third grade and we first started learning them. Amino acids were annoying, especially because I think we had to know the structure too.
Okay, advice for this teacher.
You got the administration on your side. You're good, dog. Do whatever you need to do.
The common theme through these questions is, like, the parents are allowed to be as unreasonable as they want, and the teacher always has to remain calm and polite, because it's like one of those customer service things where if the teacher ever does anything, like, tells a parent to fuck off, or... as a teacher, you have to always...
They should have more protections around that.
You always have to be, like, so polite and, like, acknowledge every criticism as, like, I understand where you're... Like, you can't ever be like, what are you talking about? Shut up. Of course I can test them on this.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I guess just do that. Do your overly polite thing and then add the... But the administration is behind me, and I think they should know this.
Mm-hmm.
Validate their feelings and then tell them to fuck off in polite wording.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of, was there ever something that my teacher found out we didn't know that astonished them? I wouldn't be surprised, but I think we kind of came at the perfect time right before the kids can't read anymore stuff started coming out.
Yeah.
You know, we had stuff like, oh, you guys are learning how to do long division in a different way than I did, but other than that, like...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. What is it? The new standards or whatever, the Common Core, which a lot of people are angry about, which is so funny. Like, of all the things to be like, my pappy did it this way, my grandpappy did it this way, and God damn it, my kids are going to do it this way. It's like long division strategies. Like, who cares? It's so funny that this is like a controversy in our country that, like, I don't know, the notation for doing a math problem is offending people.
Hey. That's why the Chinese are beating us.
There's a long history in our country of doing the notation like this, and I will not stand for my son doing it slightly differently than I did.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, you know what I wish we had learned in school that I think probably they taught when we were younger or when, you know, in older generations? How phonetics work. So, like, writing a word out phonetically. I feel like that's standardized and should be taught, and I never learned how to do it.
Oh yeah, it would probably. I'm really weak with spelling and grammar. That's another thing that I was poor at memorizing,
like the verb and
articles.
I remember those classes in like fifth grade. Yeah,
I never learned it. Yeah, I just like got away with. You see, this is the problem with the strategy of knowing just enough to get a good grade. Is like I would get away with like learning to the test so that I never had to actually learn the material, and I just don't know it in adulthood now.
I mean, this. I don't know how much of a revolution there's been in non-post-secondary education, but that's why a lot of people are moving away from memorization and just getting into, like, you know, testing in different ways that feels less like busy work. I think that's always kind of been the thing. But I don't know.
So it does seem like, it seems like you've landed on a spot where you agree with me that teachers should do this, but you do have a more fundamental gripe with this style of teaching.
Yeah.
Cool. Do you want to hear the answer?
Yeah. Let's get to it.
Dear Seriously Illinoid, as they say around my neck of the woods, woo buddy, this is going to sound like I'm swerving off topic, but stay with me. I think we're approaching a serious reckoning about having phones in schools. Phones have made all of us, parents, kids, teachers, way too accessible. Hey, interesting, they're going towards what you said. Instant communication has removed the time we used to have to cool down, collect ourselves, and react like humans instead of lizard people. In 2003, if an A-push student got 50 states homework at 10 a.m., they might stew on it for half an hour and then be over it by lunchtime. In 2024, if they get 50 states homework at 10 a.m., they text mommy that their teacher made them feel sad. Mommy looks up a thesaurus online, closes her eyes, selects some imprecise and over-the-top synonym for slightly inconvenienced, and is in a full-on email blame game with the teacher by 10:15. That was kind of mean, but honestly, sadistic, a teacher finding a gap in knowledge and then, heaven forbid, filling it? Come on now. Yeah, we didn't talk about that, but the language they used to describe her, let me scroll back up to the question, the language was sadistic, demeaning, and petty. That is insane.
Yeah.
Okay, back to the answer. I say all of this to encourage you, don't let this be the end of the road. These impeding reckonings mean we're due for several swing backs of the pendulum, not just about phones, but about returning to many of the teaching practices we've abandoned in recent years, especially rote memorization. Hey, this was in 2024. Maybe the pedagogy's changed since you looked into this, Adrian. I'm glad your admin is supportive, at least. Here's what I would do. Talk to the social studies coordinator in your district. Something is seriously off in the vertical alignment in your district. If so many kids are lacking that kind of basic knowledge, it's your coordinator's job to look into it. Keep emails to these parents extremely short. The more you explain, the more room they have to debate. If you feel comfortable, CC your administrator on those communications. Consider expanding your diagnostic test to other areas of fundamental knowledge at the beginning of the year. Not only can that help inform your teaching, but it can add to your evidence that some big things need to change in the way students are taught before they get to you. It's a real, like, technocratic advice column with a real, like, specific scope, but man, what a better answer than you would get from a lot of other advice columns, like, so specific, so targeted at what you should actually do.
God, I don't know how I would handle talking to parents as a, like, a middle school or high school teacher. I don't think I could handle it.
Yeah, it is odd, huh? Especially a high school teacher, it really feels like the students should be, at that point, able to articulate, like, 90% of issues, and parents should step in when, like, that breaks down.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. Yeah, no, I don't. I think maybe we just have differences in, you know, I'm not going to say what kind of, you know, literature Kelly's getting into. I don't think she's reading as much Paulo Freire or bell hooks as I am, but you know, maybe she is. Maybe she's more on the more radical edge of
literature. If she writes for a teaching website, she might just be on, and she might be on a slightly newer tip than you are. I mean, Paulo Freire, when was he around?
Oh, he's still cited by everybody and be writing their philosophy.
Well, when was he writing? And
I think it was like Pablo Picasso. Like, they're way more recent than you realize. I think it was like 1994.
Oh, really? Okay. I really thought he was a much older figure.
No, he's older than that, but he's not, like, ancient. He's not Socrates. bell hooks, recent. Yeah. Do you want to get into your call?
You mean your call?
Oh, wait, my call. You want to get to my call? This is from the Columbia Spectator. I think this is the first time we've done Ask Alma. This is Ask Alma, Procrastinator's Karma, How Do I Cram for Exams? By Alma Mater. Get it? Also by Brenda Huang, is the actual author. November 18th, 2021. Question. I've only attended 2 to 3 lectures for almost all my classes after syllabus week. Midterms are coming up, and I am stressed. Has anyone else been in this same situation? If so, how did you cope with it, and what should I do now? I really don't think I can catch up in time. Classic college procrastination. I will say, I can tell from the fact that they have a syllabus week that they are on a semester schedule and not a quarter schedule. So, I haven't been in the quarter system for as long as I have. Semester's a long time. You had a lot of time to kind of figure shit out.
Let me jump back to the question. How close were they to exams?
Midterms are coming up. That's all they said.
I mean, midterms are usually, like, first off, that's not going to be the entirety of your grade. I don't know. Just start studying as much as you can. Like, it sucks. But, like, what advice can you give other than, well, I wouldn't wait for the response to this question to come out in the school newspaper before you start studying. I would, as you write this question, it might be time to start studying. This is funny to, this is one of those things where it's like somebody writing an advice column that's like, help, there's an intruder in my house.
Yeah. I mean, the other part of it, I think, is like, it depends on what kind of class you're taking. Some classes, not all, are very segmented where you can learn the material for midterm one, the material for midterm two. So if you can drop a grade, maybe just count your L's and then start working hard for the next one.
Yeah, but it's usually worth it to study anyway because, right, like, the, it, knowledge
sometimes they don't always, they don't always build. They don't always scaffold, although you should. This is all of their classes, so it could be their public speaking class and their biology class.
Yeah, if it's like your comms class, you're probably fine.
Yeah.
It's going to just be a new set of ideas during the second half of the semester.
If you're attractive, you can seek out the nerd in the class and start studying with them.
Ooh, okay. We're going to do media-based.
Yeah.
But then you find out they're actually really cool. But then your
friends... I thought you were going to say that they're actually really dumb. That they're nerdy and uncharismatic and ugly, but also really dumb.
Oh, I thought she was going to find the nerd charming, but it was going to lower her social
standing.
She's
like, God damn it. Why did I spend my time hanging out with you?
But he's really confident, dumb, so she learns all the wrong material.
Yeah. He's really good at pickleball. He's actually a jock. Other strategies.
Does your college have IDs? You could maybe slip some notes into the back of your ID.
Oh, yeah, the lanyard IDs. If you're in a frat or a sorority, you can usually get test bank questions from previous class takers.
We've had that debate on the pod before because you were against that, but I always said that my college provided that from the college itself, so I never thought of it as like breaking a rule.
Wait, really? They had previous tests for every course?
I think the logic behind it was that the frats and sororities had them, so there was like on campus, there was a minority students, and they were on campus and they had a test bank and you could go in there and scan old tests, and I would do that for basically all my tests.
Interesting.
And I was
God, that puts so much work on your professors to have to change their exams every year.
Oh, and they didn't. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so they just didn't. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So okay, grade inflation seems like a crazy thing at Clemson then.
It wasn't for every class. There were some classes without the stuff in the bank, but yeah. I do think it makes sense. Like, if the frats and sororities are going to have it, I do think it's weird to limit that from other students or to not let other organizations have them.
Yeah, of course. But then you get to the point where teachers are, well, the ones who care will be like, okay, we're not doing a test. We're doing an exam. We're doing everyone has a 10-minute segment where they come into class and we film you doing an oral response to questions or whatever. Like, then you have to start, like, really going out of the box to get around that, but most people probably don't care for, like, an introductory biology course.
To be fair, I guess they did change it because there was, like, multiple years, so we would study the tests for, like, 5 or 6 years back, and there would be a mix of questions from all the years.
And that wasn't an alternative to going to class. That was just...
No, especially for the class I'm thinking of where it was really important or where, like, the tests were really hard, so we had to do that. It was, I want to say that was, like, microelectronics. Yeah, that professor specifically was really intense about counting attendance.
Oh. See, I'm against that, too. but I don't know.
I mean, that class would have been, I think it would have been impossible to do well if you didn't attend lecture too. It was a class where it was like really specific knowledge and things you have to solve for. Like, you weren't going to get it if you didn't attend class.
I totally agree, but I philosophically, you're paying for an education to be there in that class. Like, I don't know. Yeah. You're an adult. Either go there or don't. But I think some people don't like that, so.
Okay, so this person. Yeah, it's such a funny question. What can you do other than start studying now? Or like you
said, read the textbooks. Yeah. Do that thing where you, what's the best way to cheat? Is you write like a really small note card and then you have like a magnifying glass that the teacher can't see and you have all the answers on there.
Did they say it was a test where they get to bring in their notes? Open notes?
No, but I know a lot of teachers or professors that do that. Which is annoying for TAs, because sometimes we have to be on the lookout for, like, if they have, like, an oversized card, or if they have, like, two cards taped together, or whatever kind of fuck shit they try and do.
Which is so silly, like, just write tiny or whatever.
Well, that, but also, I remember one time I was emailing back and forth with a student last fall, where she was asking me about, like, oh, you gave us, like, a grade calculator for, like, how to calculate what we would get on the final and what grade that would give us. And so she was like asking me a question around, she was like, so if I get this percentage, this is what I'll get. And I'll be like, yeah. And she's like, well, but if the exam's graded by points and not percentage. And like, I really had to bite my tongue to not be like, hey, maybe use this time that you're using to figure this out to just study for the exam. And I'm sure you'll do fine. But obviously that's not something you can say. She did fine. I don't know. But yeah, anyways.
Yeah. I remember specifically for that microelectronics course, like, it would have to be open notes, or they would have had to give you, like, a formula sheet, because there was just so many formulas where it's like, unless the teacher wanted to do that bad pedagogy of making you memorize a bunch of formulas, you would always have access to.
You don't need to, yeah.
Yeah.
Any job that you're going to do as a biologist, you can look up a formula while you're doing it.
Which, like, I mean, I don't think even, like, engineers, nobody's trying to reinvent, you know, these formulas from first principles. Obviously, you go look up formula for what you need to know.
Although for some memorizing, that is how I teach my students, is like, I always tell my students when it comes to the Hardy-Weinberg conditions, I'm like, it's, to me, it's easier to derive them than to memorize them, but maybe not for everybody. But also, real quick, do you remember the quadratic formula?
X equals negative b plus or minus square root b squared minus 4ac all over 2a.
That doesn't sound like you had a mnemonic device. That just sounds like you had it memorized. Do you want me to do it to the tune of like, ba-dum, ba-dum, ba-dum,
I did it in my head, but I decided not to do it.
Oh, really?
For the
just sped it up?
Yeah. X equals negative b plus or minus square root b squared minus 4ac all over 2a.
Nice.
Why do you have it memorized?
Now that you say it, it sounds familiar, but I haven't had to use that formula in quite a while. Did you ever have to cram or do anything crazy for an exam? Or?
Yeah, usually, right? I was kind of a lazy student. I was always cramming for exams.
I don't remember as much in undergrad, but in grad school when I was still taking courses, yeah, I was kind of unsympathetic to a lot of grad students who were like, oh, we have to write this paper or whatever, and it's got to be this many pages. And I'm like, it's not that hard. Like, I spend an hour on my Saturday doing a little bit of writing and I get it all done by the end of the quarter. I don't know what everyone's complaining about.
You know,
but maybe I'm overly,
that thing people tell you not to do, which is study the day of a test. That was not me. I was studying the day of tests all the time.
Really?
I was studying the night before and the day of.
Not supposed to do that either. Like, you're supposed to take a day off, supposed to get a good night of rest, and then you're supposed to go into the test feeling confident.
The day before a test was my most important study day.
I remember there was one evolutionary biology exam that I took where, like, right as I was going into the exam, 5 minutes before it started, I was like, oh, he's definitely going to ask a question about this that I don't remember the definition of. So I quickly Googled it, memorized the Google definition, wrote that down on the exam, and like got like a question mark on it and like an X for being wrong. And I was like, God damn it, Google gave me the wrong definition of whatever genetic thing I was trying to memorize.
Can you imagine now with Google Gemini?
Mm-hmm. All right, do you want to hear the answer?
Yeah, let's hear it.
All right, let's hear from Alma Mater. Dear Procrastinator's Karma. All right, pretty dense answer, but let's go. It is that wonderful time of year again. As leaves are changing, cramming for exams and pulling all-nighters have seemingly taken precedence over concerns for physical and mental health. I am beyond sure that you are not the only one in this position. Almost everyone at some point in their academic career has felt this pressure and stress around midterms or finals. My first piece of advice would be to take a deep breath, go for a walk, and clear your mind. Essentially, do anything you can to relieve some stress caused by this situation. As simple as this advice may sound, taking a break will give you time to reflect and allow you to better assess the situation at hand. Remember, you are so much more than one grade on one midterm. You are not the summation of your academic career here at Columbia, as much as you may feel that way. You are in fact a living, breathing human with a life of your own. By the time you de-stress, the problem will still be there, but at least you will be able to think a little bit clearer and create a plan. This reminds me, I'm gonna editorialize halfway through. When I was on the student Discord for the class that I taught the first summer that I was a professor, and my exam blindsided the students because it was way harder than the first exam. And like, someone in the Discord, they knew that we were on there, but they were talking to the other students that felt really bad about how they did. And they said something about like, remember everybody, we're more than our grades. Let's keep going and try hard. And I was like, did I ever give them the impression that this is the end of like their lives? Like, why are they talking like this? I don't know. I just remember that like really took me out of it. I was like, I never said anything like that as an undergrad. I just kind of knew that this was school and it was going to be okay.
Remember, everyone, it doesn't matter what the TA says about our self-worth. We do matter.
Mm-hmm. While I certainly do not recommend cramming half a semester's worth of content for all of your classes into 2 weeks, it can be done if you use your time efficiently and plan out what content you need to learn for the course. I don't think they said they had 2 weeks. I think they said that besides the... Anyways, some of your professors may provide a study guide for your exam, and that is a great place to start. I would recommend listing on a separate sheet the contents, topics, and themes you do not know. This will guide how you study and structure your time. Identify your favorite study method, memorization, recall, visual aids, etc., and find a space where you can actively teach yourself. This may mean exploring study spaces on campus outside of your dorm room. Create a schedule and mark out the specific content and courses you will cover each day. As strange as this sounds, listing hourly what you are studying and which topics you want to cover, or assignments you will start or complete, can be a huge help and give you a general idea of how much content you can expect to get through each day. Additionally, I am a firm believer that you do not need to read every text or work that your professor assigns. I also believe that it is okay to cherry-pick which content to study. While some courses may have a cumulative exam, others may give exams that only cover specific topics. Focusing on just those topics is crucial in maximizing the little time you have to study. On the other hand, some of your courses may only assign a paper for your midterm. Once again, fully understanding your prompts and the specific content or text you need for your assignment will help guide your study time. I say all of this to remind you that while it certainly isn't the best to tailor your learning or studying specifically for one exam, sometimes you have to. I would also say make friends in your class and create study groups with others. Collaborative study is one of the best ways to cover a large amount of material in a short amount of time. By delegating who covers what material, you significantly shorten the amount of content that you personally need to review. The last piece of advice I have to give is this. Be realistic. You missed nearly a whole semester of class for whatever reason, and now you have to catch up. It is important for you to be realistic in evaluating your abilities and to be kind to yourself. Following your exams, reach out to professors and teaching assistants to go over your answers or even ask them questions about how to prepare for future exams. They want to help you. Finally, as I have said, you are more than your grades. You are a human being capable of many wonderful things outside of academics. Remember to continue to take care of yourself. Get enough sleep, eat right, take time for yourself, and let yourself breathe and relax. You deserve all of these things and more, especially during such a stressful time. Alright, sorry I laughed at the thing about things outside of academics again. That was such a funny thing, though, to be like, yay, maybe you're good at sports. Think about that.
Really feel
you like... You know how you're really good at cooking desserts? Think about that.
Really felt like they missed the core point of just, yeah, I mean, the things about, like, study for what's going to be on the test, hopefully they know that by now. It did feel like a weird question, which is just, like, how do I get a good grade on a test that I'm worried is coming up soon? It's like,
They didn't say anything about cheating.
Yeah, that's true. They didn't even say do that thing where you write with red and blue ink on top of each other on your note card and then you bring in 3D glasses.
That's smart. Yes, what else was I going to say? I guess maybe that you do need to communicate that more upfront than I did, but... I never felt like when I was doing bad in a class that I needed a pep talk about how there's more to life than academics.
Hey, Adrian, remember, it doesn't matter how underwhelming any episode of Big Facts No Cap is. You are worth something, and your life matters.
And Paul, I just want you to remember, when you're saying something to someone online, there's another human being on the other side of that screen.
Mm-hmm. So I should make them as sad as possible.
No, you shouldn't call them a troglodyte. All right, yeah. You want to get in the third segment?
Yeah, let's do it.
No cap.
So, re-explain the third segment. We'll both pick a quiz for each other.
All right, so Paul and Adrian are going to do their best to find a quiz. They are not freely available online. Most of them are only accessible to teachers with actual school districts and stuff funding them. But we're going to do the type of like quiz that you would take after you read a chapter book to get like tokens for a pizza coupon from Pizza Hut, or, you know, like, you know, whatever class reads the most books, and you have to verify that you're reading the most books and they get a prize. So we're each going to pick a book that we think we remember from our childhood pretty well, and we're going to quiz each other on those. And so, I'll do a Chronicles of Narnia, Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. I remember reading that book.
And can you do the series of unfortunate events for me? And I think the first one was A Bad Beginning.
Oh, I've got a, set of 10 questions from, factmonster.com that seems pretty easy. Do you want to do that?
Sure. And I'll do, I have, 20 questions from, Spark Notes for a full book with The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Sweet. And just for fun, we're going to end with from ReadWorks, which is one of the free gives you quizzes from books, although not in the way that we wanted. We'll do Capitalism versus Communism, Systems That Shape Our World, 8th grade, Civics and Government.
Cool.
All right.
Okay. Do you want to trade questions? I'll do two questions and you do one, since mine's twice as long as yours. Okay, what is the name of the professor with whom the children are staying at the beginning?
Is this open-ended?
Oh, Professor Kirkpatrick, Professor Kirkland, Kirk, or Kirkham?
Oh, well, that's an annoying way to write that question. Kirkland is Costco. I think it's just Kirk.
Okay, you got it right.
Light work.
Which of the Pevensey children is the first to discover the world of Narnia? Do you even want the selection?
You make them sound so Polish.
Peter, Pevensey. Susan, Edmund, or Lucy?
It's Lucy, right?
That's what I thought. Yep.
Yep. All right, where were the Baudelaire children when they heard about their parents' death? The beach, their mansion, or with their grandparents? Yeah, that's what I was going
to say. Who or what is the first person or creature that Lucy meets in Narnia? The White Witch?
Mr. Tumnus.
What magical food does the White Witch give Edmund in their first meeting?
Turkish Delight.
Come Light on work. Now.
All right. What tattoo, or if you're British, tattoo, does count?
An eye on his ankle.
Okay. All right.
How do all the children end up in Narnia together? Lucy begs them to take another look with her, and they comply. Professor Kirk locks them in the wardrobe. Oh, this is a bad quiz. You could go back. I guess it locks you in on your answer. Professor Kirk locks them in the wardrobe for misbehaving. Miss MacReady chases them into the wardrobe. Lucy and Edmund are missing, so Peter and Susan search for them in the wardrobe.
They get chased in by Mrs. MacReady?
I think you're wrong. It's the last one, but I'll lock in that answer for you. Oh, you're right.
Hey, come on now.
Because it's like she discovers it when they're playing hide and seek first, right? And then nobody believes her.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That just sounded like a name that sounded very Lewis Carroll or whatever. What was that guy's name?
I think you're right. Lewis Carroll,
C.S. Lewis?
C.S. Lewis. What marks the border between Narnia and the outside world? An oak tree and a pine grove, a stone table, two hills, or a lamppost?
Oh, I mean, those are all familiar. I forget. The stone table is where Aslan dies. The lamppost is just a remnant of something from the real world being in Narnia, but that's early in the book. So it's either the oak tree or the hills. I'm going to say the hills. That seems like more of a large geographical feature.
I think it's
feature.
A lamppost, man, but I'll put it in the hills.
Really?
Yeah, it Damn. Is a lamppost.
Got eyes. Sheesh.
Because that's close to the beginning, because that's where they go into Narnia, so they have to go back there.
Oh, I was about to say, it's in the beginning. I thought they were in the middle of Narnia when they got there. All right. What annoying habit does Mr. Poe have? Do you want multiple choices?
Yeah. Which one is Mr. Poe? Okay.
Maybe. Ooh, I'm not allowed to give you. Yeah. Okay. I know who it is, but okay. Picking his fingernails, coughing, running his hand through his hair.
Coughing.
Yeah, it's the guy who does a really bad job of taking care of them in between.
Oh, that's the banker? What magical power is the White Witch best known for? Disguising herself to resemble her surroundings, turning people into stone, transform creatures so that they take the appearance of other creatures. She can turn into a man-sized serpent. Not a woman-sized serpent?
True.
She's already a giant, so she gets tinier when she becomes a serpent?
I thought she was an ice queen. I thought she did ice powers. I thought she was like, let it go, let it go.
She is.
No, it's the turning into stone, right?
I think so, yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
The witch tells Edmund to return to Narnia on what condition? That he lead her to the Fontumnus, that he bring Lucy with him, that he brings Professor Kirk to her as she has an old grudge against him, that he bring all three of his siblings with him.
He's got to bring all of his siblings with him.
Nice.
What is the play in which Count Olaf tries to trick Violet into marrying him? The Miraculous Marriage, The Merciful Marriage, The Marvelous Marriage.
Merciful feels more in line with the book's tone, but I think it's Miraculous Marriage.
Okay. This doesn't tell me whether or not you got it. Oh, wait, never mind. It does. Hold on. One wrong. Your first one wrong.
Oh, it was Merciful Marriage?
I don't know. It does. Oh, wait. The correct answer was The Marvelous Marriage.
Oh, wow. So not even the one that was on my
Mrs.
radar.
The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel Marriage, yeah.
What creature first leads all the children through the woods? A rabbit? Tumnus the Fawn? A beaver? Or a robin?
Oh, a beaver.
Oh, it was a robin.
Oh, shit.
You remember the movie, not the book. I also would have gone with the beaver.
Yeah, I think the beavers are in there.
What is Miss Beaver's first name? Anne, Radia, Flinx, or she doesn't have one?
She doesn't have one.
Nice.
Nice. All right. What is the name of Count Olaf's kind neighbor? Justice Strauss? Janine Truffnell?
She's definitely a justice.
Juliet Nibble.
She's a justice. I would assume that's part of her name, I guess, because I remember she has a library that they like.
Yeah, as soon as I read that name, I was like, oh, that's definitely it. And I was like, yeah, it's Justice Strauss.
Where do the children agree to meet Aslan? The Stone Table, Lantern Waste, Cair Paravel, or Aslan's How?
His How? No, let's see. The Stone Table? Maybe it's the Stone Table.
I think it's Cair Paravel. Oh, nope, Stone Table.
Hey.
Good thing I'm not taking this quiz, you know what I'm saying?
Hey, come on now.
Who is
context clues.
Who's the first to address Aslan? Mr. Beaver, Peter, no one. Aslan addresses them first, or Lucy?
Oh, little Lucy.
You think, okay, I think it's Peter. It is Peter.
Fuck. What, Peter's like, what up, cuh?
What up, cuh?
Never commit suicide, cuh. Everything gonna see all right. What is the definition that Lemony Snicket gives the word aberrant at the end of the book? Very, very wrong and causing much grief. Very, very stupid and causing loss of sleep. Very, very hairy turns on roads that are steep.
I think it's the first one because that's the accurate definition.
All right, let's see. Yep, you got it.
Who is Maugrim? Chief of the witch's secret police, the dwarf who accompanies the witch everywhere, the stone lion that Aslan brings to life at the end, a wolf who is Tumnus's father.
What? Not that last one. It's the secret police.
Yeah.
Hey, come on now.
Which of the following is a Christmas present that Father Christmas gives to Edmund? A sword, a breastplate with a golden lion on it. He does not give him anything, a spear.
I think the sword went to Peter, so maybe the breastplate went to the boy?
He does not give him anything.
Wow, that's fucked. Is it because he was a bad boy? Because he betrayed them? That makes sense.
He said, not you. Lucy gets the, like, drops that heal people. Is that what she gets?
Yeah.
And Peter gets a sword, and the older sister gets a bow, and he looked at him and he was like, not you. Oh, he was missing at that point, right? He was a captive. Is that why
captive?
He doesn't get...
Yeah. That makes sense. All right, well, you already got this one, but what does Count Olaf's neighbor have in her house that Klaus enjoys?
Oh, a library.
You don't want to go with a pinball machine or a hamster?
Those would be sick.
Those would be cool. Good way to spend some what time while
Klaus's
you're being abused.
Special power because the sister was an inventor.
Like
he read, yeah. Oh.
Okay. Yeah, he liked reading. He was like, one more thing.
The baby bit.
The baby no.
Had teeth.
The baby bit and learned how to cook. She was a good cook.
In the later books, that's not going to come up in this quiz. Don't try to throw me off. Which of the following is one of Lucy's gifts from Father Christmas? A bottle of magical healing cordial.
No,
a bow and arrow.
That sounds interesting. I might go with that first one.
Oh, okay. What happens when Aslan arrives in Narnia? All the stone statues are instantaneously transformed back to life. The mice are suddenly gifted with the ability to speak. Spring begins. All of the above.
All of the above, baby.
Spring begins.
Fuck.
Because the mice learn to speak late, like
in the
next
fourth or
book.
Fifth book.
Yeah, he does give them that ability, but I guess it happens like between books, I think.
What did the Baudelaire children make for Count Olaf's dinner? Pretty sure Babish made this.
Give me the name of the spaghetti sauce types.
Haggis, sheep innards boiled inside the sheep's belly. Waffles, puttanesca sauce, a spicy Italian tomato sauce. Yeah, puttanesca. All right, killing it so far, 88%.
What is Caer Paravel? The hill on where the stone rests, the witch's palace, a wooded area where the lamppost is, the palace from which Pevensey children reign.
So you knew what it was.
I thought it
and
was...
it's the last one. It's where they reigned, right?
I think you're right, but in my memory, when I saw it on the first question, I thought it was the name of the camp that they meet at to, like, begin the battle. What bargain does Aslan make with the White Witch? Aslan will leave Narnia forever if the witch will spare Edmund. Aslan and the witch will settle the matter of Edmund's treachery through battle. Aslan will sacrifice his own life if the witch will spare Edmund's. Aslan roars at her so fiercely that the witch runs away in terror and decides to wage war on Aslan's forces instead.
He sacrifices himself.
He does what? Yeah, sacrifices
himself. He's Jesus. Did any movie series make it all the way to the end, or did they all stop at like 4 or 5?
I don't know. I think I would have heard about it if they kept coming out, so I think they stopped.
Well, I didn't know if it was like they did it like in the 70s and then they redid it in the 2000s or whatever, but I know the 2000s one didn't go past like book 4 or 5. What did Violet make to free Sunny from the birdcage? A grappling hook, a lockpick, a ladder.
A grappling hook.
Oh, okay, going all Kim Possible. Yeah. Nice. I would say lockpick.
Who is the Emperor beyond the sea? The ruler of Terabithia, an empire to the east. Aslan's father, the Emperor from the fairy tale who is still hiding in shame of having been caught nude in public. A very large whale.
I kind of didn't hear where those stopped and started. The first one is from Terabithia, which is a different book series.
Terabithia, yeah.
Terabithia?
Yeah, with Terabithia.
So it's not Terabithia, okay.
No, I think I misread it as that.
Okay, so whale, Aslan's dad, or the other one is...
An emperor from a fairy tale who's hiding from the shame of being caught nude
okay.
in public.
We're going Terabithia.
Oh, interesting. I thought it was Aslan's dad. I thought that was Gadi. Yeah, it's Aslan's father.
Really?
Yeah,
who's
it's
his
God.
Daddy?
He's Jesus. It's God.
That is bullshit. But he doesn't rule over everything? I didn't realize part of God and Jesus was a partitioning of what they ruled.
In the final book, they finally go beyond the sea, which is like their heaven land.
It's on me or it's on you?
I'll do another one because you still have 4 more. Where is Aslan killed? At Caer Paravel, Lantern Waste, Stone Table, Deep Underground.
Stone Table. Yeah, I talked about that a few times. The Baudelaire children can't be adopted by Justice Strauss because she's too old, she's not a relative, she doesn't have a husband.
She's not a relative. She's not a relative.
And that is Paul. 9 right, 1 wrong, 90%.
Which of the following is not a creature freed from stone by Aslan near the end of the novel? Jenna the Satyr, the Fawn Tumnus, the Giant Rumblebuffin, a Pompous Lion.
Which one's not freed?
Yeah.
Probably the Pompous one?
Jenna the Satyr.
Damn it. The Satyr.
What is a satyr? I know it's like a mythical creature.
Yeah, it's what, who's Danny DeVito in Hercules? Little goat man.
Cool. With what weapon is the queen attacking Peter when Aslan's army arrives on the scene? Wand, a rapier carved from diamond, a stone
AK-47.
Knife,
AK-47,
or an obsidian dagger.
Or an AK-47.
She's a real West Side Gun. She's like, doot, 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 doot,
doot, doot, doot, doot, doot. I think it's the, wait, what's the difference between the last two, obsidian and stone? I think it's a stone dagger.
You're right. 2 more questions, Adrian. What happens to the witch at the end of the novel? Aslan kills her, Peter kills her, Edmund kills her, she escapes and returns in. And that answer just cuts off.
As Edmund, it's not Peter. Edmund's young. I don't think he should be taking lives like that. But I don't think Jesus would do that. Is it Peter? Does Peter do it?
I think she escapes. Oh, Aslan kills her.
Aslan eats that ass. Okay.
She definitely comes back. Maybe it's like a Satan metaphor where even though they kill her, because I feel like she's a villain in the rest of the novels too. What happens when the kings and queens return to England? They rule over England as kings and queens. The professor has them committed to an insane asylum after hearing their story. The professor sues them for theft of his fur coats. Nothing much, and they return to being normal British children again.
The last one, only like 10 days have passed.
Yep.
Yeah.
You got 16 out of 24 questions correctly.
It's not great. That's not as good as yours.
Which would give you a 66. That's a failing grade, Adrian.
Damn, it's been a long time since I read that book. All right, do you want to take this capitalism versus communism quiz, or do you want to end
out here? Let's do it. No, I think we got time.
All right, this is from ReadWorks. Here we go. First question, what is capitalism? A, an environmental disaster that happened when a BP oil rig exploded in the Gulf of Mexico.
Mm-hmm,
B,
mm-hmm.
an economic system where individuals and businesses own property and resources and make decisions about how those are used.
Yep.
C, a social reform that gave free and accessible healthcare to everyone in the United States. Or D, a political system where there are no social classes or private property and people work based on their abilities.
I don't think they have the right answer in here, but I think they're trying to get us to say B.
All right, I'm going to say B too. Yep, that's the answer. What contrast does the
None
author
of the
draw
answers
between
were an exploitative system used to keep the working class down?
The first question in the vocabulary to know, or the first word in vocabulary to know, is exploitation. What contrast does the author draw between the motivations for producing goods in a capitalist society and in communist societies? In capitalist societies, goods are made to earn profit and satisfy demand, while in communist societies, goods are made to meet the community's needs. In capitalist societies, goods are made for trade with other countries, while in communist societies, goods are made for personal use. In capitalist societies, goods are made to reduce pollution, while in communist societies, goods are made to increase the size of cities. Or D, in capitalist societies, workers produce goods only for military purposes, while in communist societies, workers produce goods for art.
A, I think, is what they're trying to get us to say.
I agree with that. Let's see. Number three.
None of those answers where goods are created to enrich the bourgeoisie class.
When communist theories were put into practice, however, they did not live up to Marx and Engels' ideals. One major reason for this is that communism assumes people will act in the interest of society as a whole, rather than pursuing personal gain. However, competition, ambition, and self-interest can often undermine the communist system's goals of equality and shared resources, leading to inefficiency and corruption. What conclusion can you draw from this evidence? A. Every communist country lived up to the ideals set out by Marx and Engels' theories of communism. B. Competition, ambition, and self-interest are positive qualities with no real negative consequences. C. Human behavior can shape and impact the way a system like communism work in real life. Or D, people always act in the interest of the common good because they live in a society with others.
You see, I have a fundamental issue with this question.
Really? Because you had issues with the other ones, too.
Okay. Let's see.
That reminds me of a Parenti quote about how a good society does not breed good people.
I like that axiomatically. Yep. The question just presupposes that communism fails because of internal contradictions, not because of external.
Human nature. Human nature. Based on the text, what is a shared challenge for both capitalism and communism when they are put into practice? A. In both systems, no one is allowed to vote or have political freedom, and creative expression can be limited. B. Both systems can fail to meet the needs of all workers, leading to poverty amongst the working class. C. In both systems, everyone gets the same amount of resources, even if a person needs more than another person. D. Both systems are based on the goal of a workers' revolution, which can lead to violence and destruction.
Shouldn't they be challenging kids more than this test? What age? Does this have, like, a age it's set for? Hopefully not, like...
It's eighth graders.
Eighth graders? Seems a little simple for eighth graders, but sure. I guess they were trying to get you to say what was... Which was the... I forget which one it was, but there was the obvious one. Was it B?
Yeah, B was the obvious one. Let's see. Do-do-do-do. Please read the following sentences from the text. These strengths of capitalism, however, can have negative consequences when put into practice. Critics note that without proper government regulation, capitalism can incentivize businesses to put profit over the well-being of their workers. As used in this excerpt, what does the word incentivize most closely mean? Question or investigate, encourage or motivate. This is just the GRE. Do you know what incentivize means?
Encourage.
Yeah, good job. Let's see. This one's a written answer. Do you want to do any of the open-ended questions? Let's see. Describe two negative consequences of the Industrial Revolution. Marx and Engels, communist...
Wait, can you reread this question?
9. Marx and Engels' communist theories imagined a worker revolution that would lead to a fair and free classless society where wealth and property could be used for the common good. How did Mao Zedong's policies fail to achieve these goals?
Okay.
It's an open answer. It's a written answer. You gotta go into your, like, 5-paragraph essay. How did Mao Zedong fail these?
How did
Mao- and also we're gonna call in Connor for this question too.
We're gonna call in all our Maoist friends.
Let me call in Marshall.
Let's get the MCU in on this.
Look, okay, here, let's see what the answer is. Answers may vary, but should be based in the text. Students may write that Mao Zedong failed to realize Marx and Engels' vision because he kept power centralized in his government rather than getting rid of social classes. He enforced his vision through violence and propaganda. For example, instead of letting people freely contribute to society after a worker revolution, Mao forced workers into government-led industrial projects during the Great Bleed Forward. This led to famine and millions of deaths. Students may write that his cultural revolution punished people for independent thinking, targeting intellectuals, and encouraging violence. Instead of creating fair, free, classless societies, Mao's policy led to widespread suffering and fear. Damn, that's crazy he did that.
That's crazy.
All right, besides Mao being a rude dude with a toad, what are your big facts, no cap?
This communism thing sounds bad. Don't get into it, kids. I did not like that at all.
But about studying. We did pretty good for not studying for that exam.
Are you smarter than an 8th grader? Hell yeah, we are. We could crush that shit. Yeah.
Ooh, maybe we should have done Are You Smarter Than a 6th Grader as the third segment.
5th grader? That was the show.
Oh, yeah.
But we need to make it a little harder for us. Come on now. We're clearly working on another level. Okay, my big fact. Study smarter, not harder.
Ooh, and my no cap? You ain't gotta study if ChatGPT will do all of it for you.
Shout out ChatGPT. Stay woke.
Bye. Stay woke.